Thank you, Neil. Our next two speakers actually come from Frankfurt. Roland Roth actually wrote his dissertation there on Herbert Marcuse. Now he teaches at the Fachhochschule in Magdeburg, and he will be our next speaker, to be followed by Heinz Steinert, who taught at Frankfurt University for a long time until he emerited a little while ago.
Thank you, Neil, for your presentation. It's very difficult for me to follow because you took some of my arguments, and but it's easy now because I can leave some points out and just concentrate on a more abstract, more concrete level of the abstract theory. And just want to give you four dimensions of these old two dinosaurs, Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre, what they have to say us today, and maybe in what respect we should actualize their thinking and work in their tradition. First of all, Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre remained within the Marxist tradition, sometimes in a rather orthodox way, but with some major revisions, for instance, in stressing the specific economic and political importance of the so-called reproduction sphere of everyday life, of the urban, of consumption, and so on. In discussing the articulation of mass production and mass consumption, they stressed a central element of the Fordist phase of capitalist development, which became dominant after World War II, long before regulationists analyzed Fordism. Marcuse and Lefebvre focused on central changes in post-war capitalist societies and the promises accompanied with them. In detecting the systematic articulation of production and consumption, they were convinced that ruptures between and within both spheres can contribute to a renewal of a socialist alternative. Under the impression of the affluent golden age Fordism, they promoted the idea that even small rifts and ruptures within the system might lead to major changes. The focus on reproduction enhanced the status of everyday life, and especially the urban and critical theory. This was explicitly the case in Lefebvre's work, not so strong in Herbert Marcuse's oeuvre. In some sense, Peter Marcuse overcame the blind spot of his father. Without giving up the radical critique of capitalism, they challenged the Marxist orthodoxy of the centrality of the production sphere, the working class, and of unionism in emphasizing the importance of the reproduction sphere as a systematic element of post-war capitalism and a central source of the legitimacy of the capitalist rule. From the very beginning, critical theory struggled with the unexpected political consequences of the expansion of the capitalist mode of production into all spheres of everyday life, especially for the formation of the so-called false consciousness. Undoubtedly, Lefebvre's and Herbert Marcuse's experiences and thinking were deeply embedded in the golden age of post-war Fordism and its crisis beginning in the late 1960s and early 70s. If my reading is correct, both authors couldn't even imagine the contours of a post-Fordist constellation. They only offered variations of late and latest capitalism, like Herbert Marcuse, or state monopoly capitalism, like Lefebvre in his De l'État, influenced by French experiences. I don't want to give you some of the characteristic of post-Fordism, but it was really a different story. It was predominantly this post-Fordist constellation that challenged the plausibility of the kind of analysis Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre had to offer. And even more important, the political focus on the reproduction sphere, on the urban question and the break with everyday practices, lost its political importance and revolutionary impetus. The opposition against post-Fordism became in some sense more traditional in emphasizing liberal, social, economic, and political rights and full citizenship. Unconventional practices like demonstration, boycotts, blockades, and other forms of civil disobedience have become part of normal politics. Many initiatives and projects of the new social movement had been co-opted or institutionalized themselves, for instance, as elements of an ordinary local politics. Nevertheless, there are also some new elements of opposition in and against post-Fordism, ranging from a new transnationalism, the mobilization against global summits, the construction of social fora, and the global issues like global warming, biopolitics, and more, and a colorful local opposition against the neoliberal consensus in defending public goods and services. At least since October this year, we have many signs that a certain post-Fordist period is in a deep crisis and maybe there has come to an end. With the breaking of the neoliberal consensus, also the opposition against it can or will lose a common ground. At the moment, it looks as if political regulations gain some importance, more exactly the role of the state within certain modes of regulation. Nevertheless, the contours of a new post-Fordist phase of capitalist accumulation remain vague. But that the new formation will be a capitalist one seems to me rather unchallenged in the dominant Western capitalist society. Here Obama offers no hope. To take up the discussion of yesterday evening, if we are thinking about radical alternatives to capitalism, we have not only to address the McCain voters, but maybe 95% of the population. We still are only a small, more or less radical minority, citing the ironic self-characterization of the 1968 protesters. The second point is an exaggerating critique of contemporary society. I think Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre's intellectual influence is not at least due to a specific kind of theorizing contemporary societies. They both preferred an exaggerating, provocative analysis of contemporary societies, stressing the totalitarian tendencies of post-war capitalism in one-dimensional society, or in the term of Henri Lefebvre, la société bureaucratique de consommation dirigée, and blaming the passive masses. They stressed some tendency without the positivist ambition to give a differentiated picture of contemporary society with its counter tendencies and ambivalences. This way of radical thinking is by itself supporting oppositional movements in giving recognition to their motives. The historical background for this theoretical choice was the experience of fascism, the Holocaust, Stalinism, and Hiroshima. Therefore, intellectual work, so their view, has to become more radical, detecting first of all the negative tendencies and potentials for catastrophes in contemporary societies. To make them visible, it is necessary to give a shocking and provocative account of the inherent societal possibilities. Critical theory has to offer messages for individuals and groups willing to resist destructive developments, even if it is in a certain time just a message in the bottle without any broader audience or oppositional actors. In contrast to other versions of critical theory for Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre, it was an intellectual and political duty to support and inspire radical opposition practices of their time, and not just to stay in a Grand Hotel Abgrund. Looking back to the 1960s and 70s, this kind of a critical theory played an important role in supporting and legitimizing radical opposition. Its truth cannot be found in dominant social developments, but in strengthening counter-tendencies, preventing the worst. Nevertheless, the tradition of critical theory fulfills some quality standards which should inspire our intellectual work. First of all, they detected dominant tendencies, not marginal and at least irrelevant tendencies of societal development. Looking back, we have to recognize that Herbert Marcuse and Lefebvre were right in pointing to the totalitarian moments of a welfare warfare capitalism repressing oppositional movements within and executing numerous wars during the so-called Cold War period. And the second point is that the closeness is the closeness to movement politics. We can only admire an astonishing sense for the oppositional motives on the way. Herbert Marcuse, for instance, had a focus on gender and ecological issues and praised rebellious subjectivity long before it was acknowledged in a broader public. I think Peter Marcuse is in the tradition of this kind of provocative thinking and resisting a de-radicalization in the neoliberal academia. Third point is there is some, if from a distant point of view, it looks as if Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre enthusiastically welcomed all kinds of rebellious upheavals in the Western world, especially around the famous 1968, and tried to strengthen their revolutionary meanings and potentials. Indeed, they have been closer to movement activists than many of their colleagues, but it was not at all an uncritical or an affirmative relationship. Both Marcuse and Lefebvre developed their central visions of liberation years before any relevant movement appeared in post-war capitalism. Marcuse wrote his Eros and Civilization in 1956, and Lefebvre's first chapters of the Critique of Everyday Life were written in 1947, so long ago, long before 1968 or things like that. Their message was a revolution has not only to overcome capitalist rule, but it has also to liberate social ties, lifestyles, aesthetics, culture, the relationship to nature and technology, the points David Harvey referred to this morning. Asked for his influence on the movements of the 60s, Herbert Marcuse once expressed his gratitude and happiness about the coincidences between the visions of a liberated society he presented in his early critiques of contemporary capitalism and Soviet communism and the motives and issues of the protest movements of the 60s and 70s. Lefebvre's Critique of Everyday Life was one of the important books that inspired the Situationists in France, but he traveled also to Amsterdam when the provosts began their fight against the fragmentation of the city. For Herbert Marcuse, especially some mobilization of the women's and the ecological movement came closest to his view of liberation overcoming all kinds of surplus repression. In his political interventions, he tried to support some of these liberating tendencies against countercurrents that were supporting a traditional view of proletarian politics in student parties or left-wing terrorism concentrating on the question of political power. Changing the world in the sense of liberation was tied to a change in personalities in everyday life. Marcuse insisted that only the tension of both sides of change, the socio-political and the personal, guarantees a process of liberation which doesn't lead to the reproduction of the old structures, in Marx terms, die alte Scheiße. After his political cooperation with the French Situationists between 1957 and 62, Lefebvre added the necessity of the creation of new urban spaces overcoming the abstract spaces of bureaucratic state power. Undoubtedly, Marcuse and Lefebvre were open enough to detect and recognize the ideas and practices of the new movements of their time, but they had their own intellectual maps and didn't hesitate to use them either critically or encouraging. Now I have to close, but the best part of my paper maybe comes now, and I just give you an idea. What it is about. I think there are four points we should remind if taking on the work, the intellectual habits of Herbert Marcuse and Henri Lefebvre. First of all, we have to be aware of the revolutionary character of capitalism. It's really revolutionary in producing new faces of capital accumulation in a sense that we shouldn't reify any kind of capitalism we have now. There is much more going on, and it's necessary to detect these new tendencies of capital accumulation. Maybe we are now in a more destructive part of the creative destruction. Maybe we can later on see a more constructive element. Nevertheless, I think that my second point is, I will just go to two questions, I think, left open by both of them. How to organize a political opposition given a vision of radical change that will last more than 100 years, like Herbert Marcuse once told us, will be the project of many generations, and combine it with these gradual changes that we heard this morning, changing a capitalist society without losing the radical and challenging momentum. In my vision, we have still not very convincing ideas what could be the political forms, the formats, and how to organize such an ongoing process, because the idea it could be a new party in Germany now is really out of any discussion because of the development of the Greens and others. So there is no way to agree, no new party organizing all of it. And I think the idea the social forum movement can become such a thing is also not very convincing after all these experiences. So, and it's not only, we cannot only rely on the momentum of social movements by themselves, because we have all these cooptations and integrations and so on, so it doesn't flourish from themselves. So we have a really political, strategic question how to organize and not to give up our hope to any political party or things like this. Last point, and it would be, it's for me the most relevant, if we talk about the idea of the right to the city. In which sense do we really want to become localists and to come to start with the communal level? There's a long tradition in Western Europe, especially, where communalism is the central form of organization of society. Peter Blickler, an historian, gave us wonderful impressions of the history of communalism in Western Europe. So do we want to go back, and would this be the idea necessary to solve also the organizational question and to have the vision of a future where we have very strong localities and in some sense a weak state or nothing like it, and to have a federal ensemble and a federal cooperation of all these localities worldwide. Thank you.